views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Welcome to the hit show, The Brilliance Ultimatum. Time's up. We have the power. We have the resources. We have the knowledge. We have the intellect. We have the innovation. And we have the heart to create a world based on parity, practical innovation, and potential. This hit show with Claudette Rowley will take us on a journey so we can explore our planet, our global community, and our opportunity for transformation. We need a cultural revolution that allows us to look past political squabbles, lack of humanity, and to what she calls reality resistance. So tune in. This is the Brilliance Ultimatum. And time's up.
Hey, everybody, this is Claudette Rowley, and you are listening to The Brilliance Ultimatum, Time's Up, on Transformation Talk Radio. Stay with us for the next hour, and let us help you experience what's going well in the world and the opportunity for transformation that's upon us. On the second and fourth Fridays of each month, we will have some of the foremost change makers, action takers, and truth tellers helping you re-envision what's possible on our planet and in our world. So today, I'm really excited about our guest. He is Eric Isle, and he is a change maker in the arena of human experience. So Eric is committed to improving human experience in work and business. He has decades of experience in diverse roles and industries, and lots of certifications in customer experience, organizational culture, and change management, and brings a really research-based and empowering message that can help transform the role that work plays for both individuals and society. And Eric has helped both nonprofit and for-profit organizations in lots of different industries help improve their experiences for customers and employees while still improving effectiveness and efficiency. He speaks, advises, and consults widely on human experience, driven by a deeply held belief that work can be more than just another four-letter word. Welcome, Eric.
Thanks so much, Claudette. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, I'm so excited you're here. I've been really looking forward to our chat today.
Yeah.
It's going to be fun. Yeah. So when you say human experience,
yeah,
you know, what do you mean by that? What should we be thinking about?
Well, I think you know, we have these this term customer experience, which came up in the 90s-ish, and a lot of organizations are getting really focused around customer experience, and I think that's fantastic. And sort of growing out of that, we have all these conversations about employee experience and sort of, you know, taking lessons learned from customer experience and applying them to the employees. And I think that's great too. And I think in both of those cases, we end up with these abstract concepts of people who are customers and people who are employees, when really business is just humans serving humans. Mm-hmm. And so I like to look at, you know, what are the commonalities and what are we looking for in our own sort of human experiences of work and business that are universal? And, you know, we are all both customers and employees in most cases. So I think connecting those dots is really important.
I love what you just said, that human business is about humans serving humans.
Yeah, exactly. Wow. Exactly. It's that simple.
It's that simple. But all these, you know, constructs and paradigms and ways of thinking about it get put around it.
Absolutely.
Like you said, so dehumanizing, especially employees, right? Sometimes customers. But humans serving humans. And so if we look through that lens of humans serving humans, what have you found is possible?
Well, I think a lot of great things are possible, and I think this is where I get really excited about the impact that our experiences, say, in the workplace, can potentially have on our society as a whole. So I get really excited about people finding their agency and finding the ways in which they can have some control over what happens to them and what their world looks like. And I think it's easier to bite that off in the workplace than it is to bite it off in the society as a whole. Mm-hmm. But as we know, sort of what happens in the workplace then sort of crosses over and spills over into other domains of our life. And so I think what's possible is to empower people at work in ways that empowers people out in the society at large.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And tell us more about the, you know, this crossover spillover model, right? I think, you know, it's interesting. It's pretty intuitive, but most people aren't talking about it, right? So there's something interesting here to explore.
Yeah, it's funny. You know, I mean, I think, you know, psychologists have been researching spillover, sort of as its own concept, which spillover is about, you know, when you have, transmission, I guess, of emotions and states of well-being from one domain of your life to another. So, for example, something happens to you at work and it raises certain emotions and you take those emotions home with you. Mm-hmm. So psychologists have been studying spillover, and then other psychologists were studying crossover, which is this notion that not only do you take those emotions from one domain to another, but those emotions actually get transferred onto your loved ones, the people closest to you. Mm-hmm. So that if you're stressed out at work, you can make your significant other stressed out as well, right? So these things, crossover and spillover, were studied separately. And then some researchers said, hey, but these things are connected. These things are related. So it pulled together these two areas of psychological research into a kind of a unified model that I think makes a very strong case for improving, as I said, the human experience of work. So, you know, if we can have great experiences at work that give us positive emotions and well-being, then we can take those out into our home, into our community. And, you know, the opposite is also true, that, you know, if work is a place of, you know, cutthroat competition, power games, stress, even uncertainty, that's going to have a negative effect on how we go out into the world and on our loved ones, right? So that's why I believe that sort of improving the human experience of work becomes kind of a moral imperative as much as it's an economic one. So an example I always like to use is parenting, right? Because that's one of those areas where there's often a lot of work-home conflict, or work-family conflict, as the researchers like to call it, is around parenting. But, you know, if I decide that my most important area of focus is going to be, I want to be the best parent I can be, right? And I go out and I read a bunch of books and I listen to a bunch of great podcasts and I maybe take some classes or whatever it takes for me to kind of up my game and become the parent I know I can be. And after a while of applying that and becoming a better parent, maybe I start to see some fruits of my labors, right? Mm-hmm. Time with my kids more enjoyable. Maybe they fight less with each other. They fight less with me. And my relationship with my partner is even improved by that, right? A sort of positive crossover there. Mm-hmm. That's all great. But then I have this sort of optimism and energy from things going great at home that I then maybe take into the workplace. And then I, you know, apply, say, the communication tactics that I learned from one of those parenting books with my coworkers. And one of my coworkers says, hey, you know, you're a really great listener or whatever. And I noticed that these techniques that I use to gain agreement or increase harmony at home are working to gain agreement and increase harmony at work. Then, you know, coworkers start to be a lot friendlier to each other, to me. And I, you know, actually start looking forward to going to work. And then we have this, we sort of have this positive cycle, right? This virtuous cycle, where now I'm even feeling more positive and successful, and I take that energy and happiness home, and I get this sort of upward spiral of crossover and spillover that I think is, you know, gives me hope and optimism about kind of the way the world can look.
Right, exactly, because it changes your whole outlook, right? Your whole outlook has now changed.
Exactly.
Yeah, what's striking me too is it reminds me of just a really direct comment I heard somebody say in a client organization I'm doing some work in, and he said recently, and I don't remember how it came up, but he said I really love this job, the job he has there. He said, and my wife is thrilled. He said for all, you know, the reasons you just said, because he's happy at work. So he comes home. And he's not in a bad mood because he really disliked his last job. He comes home and he's happy and he had a good day usually. And so she's thrilled. She gets a completely different husband coming home.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, it was such a great, it was like a quick, you know, 2-minute conversation. But it's really stuck with me about, you know, what was possible for him just in changing, you know, one company to another, being in a job that really fits the things that he loves to do, that he's really skilled at. And, you know, he brings a lot of positivity into that workplace, you know, just by his demeanor, right? Just how he interacts with people, that he's friendly, that he's helpful, that he's all, you know, all these things he adds, you know, contributes positively. So it's a, you know, just another example of what you were saying, of what happens when we get into that kind of place, right? Where the positive begets the positive. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, we're also accepting, right? We're sort of rejecting, I guess, maybe this paradigm that, you know, we have a work self and another self. Right. And so that gives us all kinds of power when we say, oh, right, I'm actually the same person when I go to work. And that gives us, and I love that story that you shared, because I mean, that tells us that we're whole people, and that we don't have these rigid barriers in our lives between work and home or community.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know about you, but I very much try to be the same person both places.
Absolutely. You know,
the best
absolutely.
Part of myself. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and I think there are arguments to be made. I had this great boss many, many years ago. He was a fantastic guy. He was a really great coach and mentor to me, but he would always say to me, "Hey, Eric, if I can ever help you with anything work related, of course, just let me know."
Interesting.
and he always had to say that. And I think it was more about what he was comfortable with than anything else.
Yeah.
But you know, we have had over the years this, you know, very well-intended and probably necessary notion that certain parts of our personal lives don't enter the workplace. Mm-hmm. But I believe we can push those boundaries a little bit and actually contribute more in the workplace and get more out of the workplace when we're able to sort of say, you know what, this is me. This is all that I am and all my weirdness.
Right, exactly. The idea being that everybody's weird, right? When you get to know who they are.
Exactly.
Which really means nobody's weird, right?
Right.
Because we all have these different parts of ourselves. But yeah, I see it over and over, really, really, you know, enrich, you know, I think folks who listen to the show know I do a lot of work in culture change, as do you.
Yeah.
But right, that you just see what happens in organizations when some of this really starts to come to life. So we're actually going to take a quick break right now. And when we come back, we're going to delve into more of what's possible when we start this positive trajectory at work. And then what starts to change, right, in the rest of society when we start to look at contribution and productivity a little bit differently. So you are listening to The Brilliance Ultimatum. Time's up. I'm Claudette Rowley. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Laura Meeks, and the most common problem that my clients face is all work and no play. This is why I created Fly High Living. I help you develop a balanced life plan and guide you to a place where you love to wake up in the morning.
Call 888-666-1570 or go to flyhighliving.com to sign up for the 4-week Flight Plan for Life course.
Tune in to The Jen Royster Show, intuitive guidance to inspire your life, each Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific and 11 a.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. This amazing show is an inspirational hour that will take you on an epic metaphysical journey to discover the spiritual approach to life's greatest challenges. Dr. Jen is an internationally known intuitive counselor, spiritual teacher, and energy healer. Call in for intuitive readings and visit JenRoyster.com for more information.
Do you sometimes feel overwhelmed by your mind? Powerless when it seems to spin in worry circles or bombard you with self-critical thoughts? Do you want to learn how to master your mind and feel more in control of your life? Listen to Dr. Friedman's Empowerment Radio. Shift from confusion to clarity, self-doubt to confidence, and from anxiety to peace and balance. Dr. Friedman and his many guest experts share the insights and tools you want to live with greater ease, joy, and purpose. Tune in to Empowerment Radio every first and third Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time.
On the cutting edge of the new mainstream, Christine Upchurch is passionate about bringing together science, psychology, and spirituality in a way that can be applied to our everyday lives for true transformation. The Christine Upchurch Show, stellar conversations to illuminate your journey, engages some of the most outstanding visionaries on the planet in lively dialogue to inspire you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Join Christine every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time on KKNW, AM 1150, and Transformation Talk Radio.
To find answers to life's questions, you need to look within yourself. Dr. Glenna Rice brings your questionable conversations on Transformation Talk Radio each month. Tune in each month for insight into how you can live up to your full potential. Dr. Glenna is a physical therapist, certified Access Consciousness, and Access Body Class Facilitator. How does it get any better than this? For more information on Dr. Glenna Rice and her work, visit glennarice.com.
How many times do you find yourself saying, "It was nothing"? Next time someone tells you, "Great job," you'll know how to accept it and not deflect it by listening to Courage to be Seen Radio with host Sherry Clark. Sherry Clark is an experienced global engineering leader, coach, and mentor. From her experiences one-on-one coaching to corporate consulting and executive coaching, Sherry has learned many women need at least three things to discover and face success. Learn about the ACES program, how to survive male-dominated fields with grace and authenticity, and reach the top without ever once giving up on who you are. Courage to be Seen host Sherry Clark explores the awesome power of your entire self. Check out her website, couragetobeseen.com, and listen to the first Tuesday of the month at 11 a.m. Pacific with host Sherry Clark. You have the courage to be seen. See you later.
We're back on the Brilliant Ultimatum. I'm Claudette Rowley with my guest here today, Eric Isle, who is a change maker in the area of human experience. And we're talking today about how work can be more than just another four-letter word. So, Eric, I know we were just chatting a lot about how positivity begets positivity, and what happens when we are so fulfilled at work that we take that out into the rest of our lives, or vice versa, right?
Yeah.
And I was really interested in. It makes me think about something that you have talked about, which is and relates to work, which is this idea of contribution versus productivity, which I am fascinated by your take on it, because I don't think this is talked about enough at all.
Yeah.
In the workplaces that I go into, at least. So tell us a little bit about this.
Yeah, well, I think this comes from, my background. A lot of what I worked on before I started working on sort of culture was I was working with individuals around work-life balance. And in working on work-life balance, the topic of productivity inevitably comes up. How do I get more done? I'm not getting enough done. I've got too much to do at home, or I've got too much to do at work, and I'm not getting enough done. How do I get more done? And, this focus on productivity becomes all about completing tasks. And what I've found is that it can become sort of an end in itself, right? That if you're just focused on productivity, it's about getting as much done as you can, and getting it done in less time with less effort. Mm-hmm. And if it's productivity without purpose, then you're missing something. And so what I think productivity plus purpose is something called contribution. Mm. And I think contribution is about, how do I add value? How am I contributing to whatever sphere I'm in? It's all about what's the impact I can make, as opposed to what can I get done? And when we do that, we start to, I think, accomplish a few things. First of all, from sort of a basic time management, we start to focus on, as Eisenhower used to talk about, the urgent and the important, right? We start mm-hmm. to focus on the important. We focus on what we can contribute, and that helps us to home in on, what's going to make the greatest possible impact on the people or things or causes or projects that matter most to us. And I think the other thing that contribution does, or focusing on contribution, is that it causes us to look at serving a need that's outside of ourselves. Mm-hmm. If it serves us too, that's great, and it should. But it comes from us, and it goes out into the world, and hopefully, makes the world better in some way. Mm-hmm. So that I think is where I'm really interested in the possibilities of focusing on contribution instead of just focusing on getting things done. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of advice out there about productivity, and I think it's fantastic, but I think it's often productivity without purpose.
Oh, I think it almost always is. unless an organization has specifically said, let's bring purpose into it, right?
Yeah.
You don't really, at least in what I've read and seen, you don't usually see that mentioned. So what happens to an organization when they are both productive and purposeful, or, in other words, focusing on contribution? I mean, what have you seen change?
Yeah, I think what can change, and I'd love to do more experimentation with this. I've only done small experiments, but I'd love to see more experimentation with this, because I think it's similar to, I think, there's a popular focus on gratitude, right,
yeah,
in the world. And, at the end of the day, you write down, three things that you're grateful for. And I think that practice, this research has found that people end up feeling more positive, that it's actually helped people with, with mood disorders, and it's incredibly powerful to focus on gratitude. And I think contribution can have a similar impact. Mm-hmm. So at the end of the day, what did I contribute can be a really powerful question for organizations to have employees ask themselves. Mm-hmm. So the contribution doesn't have to be huge, right? It can be a suggestion or a question in a meeting that changes mm-hmm. the conversation, right? Or mm-hmm. Maybe it's a donation to a cause that's important to you, or maybe it's, you know, doing laundry. Whatever it is,
making
a contribution, picking up trash in your neighborhood, whatever it is. Or it might be completing a really tough project that's at work, or even just having a really great conversation with a customer at mm-hmm. work. When an organization can focus in on those things, then the organization starts to lift up out of operational focus a little bit mm-hmm. and realize that it exists, you know, as we said at the beginning of this conversation, to serve humans. And so if we can focus on that, then employees are not just focused on busyness any longer. Mm-hmm. Right? They're focused on the value they're delivering. They're not focused on themselves. They're focused on those that they're serving. They're not focused on quantity. They're more focused on quality. And I think that shift, And you know, and I know from our work in culture, when you start to make those kinds of shifts in what people believe is expected of them, then you can start to see massive shifts in the effectiveness of the organization.
And it's really striking me, this paradigm shift, you know, you're talking about, right? You lift out of only operational focus. Of course, operation is important, right? But
absolutely.
If you're only focusing on operational focus and you shift out of that, and you elevate it into, well, of course we need to have, you know, operations working, and we serve humans.
Yeah, yeah, and is so important. Yeah.
Right, the and we serve humans. And that this is, you know, it's what I was reflecting on as you were talking was, we've all seen organizations that will do like great service to the community, right? Like we have a community service day and we take it, you know, we're not working for the day, but we're doing the service and we get paid and everything, but we're out in the community, which is wonderful. And it always seems to be separate and apart from their day-to-day.
Right.
The way you're talking about is something different. You're talking about making that level of service part of the day-to-day, weaving it into the culture, weaving it into that fabric. So it's just part of how the organization operates. Is that
yeah,
right?
I hope so. I think so. I mean, and I think we're seeing this shift, you know, I think what you described, you know, where mm-hmm. what we're doing in the community is separate from what we do day-to-day, you know, this kind of corporate social responsibility window dressing, or, you know, that's done in the margins. Yeah. I think we're seeing that, shift. And I think the shift is because of the power of both customers and employees mm-hmm. saying, no, we expect more of organizations, right? We expect them to actually have a purpose beyond making money, right? Making money is important because otherwise you don't survive. You don't sustain whatever your mission is. But we expect you to have a purpose beyond that. And so I think we're seeing the shift, and I think we saw it. I'm sure you saw the Business Roundtable statement, right? About the purpose of a corporation, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Where they've shifted over the past 20 years from saying the purpose of a corporation is to maximize shareholder value mm-hmm. to saying the purpose of a corporation is to serve customers, employees, suppliers, communities. And that shift, right? Even, you know, in the Business Roundtable, you know, it's a group of, I forget, almost 200 really powerful corporations, right? Saying, okay, that we're about something bigger. We have to be about something bigger. Mm-hmm. So I think we're seeing this real sea change happen. And, you know, it's easy to look at those kinds of statements with cynicism and skepticism. And I think we should have a little bit of cynicism and skepticism. But I do think it's a marker. Even if that statement is just a PR move, it's a PR move that customers and employees are going to expect accountability for. So I think we're seeing this shift where we're saying we want organizations, corporations especially, to contribute to their communities, not to take from their communities.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, I think I have heard that statement or something similar to it. And it strikes me, even if it is a PR move, and it might, you know, whatever it is, the fact that they're willing to say it.
Yes.
You know, I take all the positivity I can get. So,
So
the fact that they're willing to say it, to say this is not about maximizing shareholder profits alone anymore, which has been, you know, the whole purpose for decades. So the fact that they're willing to say it, to say there has to be something more and better here. We exist to serve in a different way. We're part of this human community. That's what I'm hearing.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well, I think that we have these, you know, these big corporations, these big investment firms, as you said, willing to go out and say it. And mm-hmm. you and I don't know. We don't know whether they mean it or not.
Right.
but I choose, sort of in the absence of evidence, I'm going to choose sort of the most empowering read of that, mm-hmm. which is that something is shifting.
Something is shifting, and it's been striking to me, you know, even not to get anything into anything political, but just even as we've had our federal presidential administration, you know, rolling back some of the climate protections, right, environmental protections.
Right.
And then you hear these states like saying, no, we're not doing that. We're keeping these protections. Or a major, you know, corporation saying, no, we have to keep these protections. We're honoring them.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's amazing. Yeah.
It's beautiful. Right. And I do a lot of work with utility companies, electric and gas utility companies. And, you know, in states where, you know, where there have been these, you know, rollbacks of protections and that mm-hmm. kind of thing, those big utility companies, which we can easily think of as these, you know, soulless corporations are saying, no, we're shutting down the coal plants.
Right.
We're gonna be 100% renewable. We're gonna be 100% clean energy. And they're doing that sort of in spite of what's happening at a regulatory level. Mm-hmm. They're saying we're gonna be stewards of our communities and of our environment. And that kind of statement, again, politics aside, that kind of statement is saying we see ourselves as having a purpose here.
Yeah. We see ourselves as having a purpose, and we also, the other thing I read into it, right, is that we also understand the consequences of not doing it.
Exactly.
Are real, right? I mean, this isn't just a made-up situation.
That's right.
And so it's you know, it's purposeful. We're part of something bigger because the consequences would be dire.
Yes.
If we didn't, you know. So there's this really interesting I think, you know, upward, I think you would even use this phrase in our email exchange, you know, upward spiral, right?
Yes.
What's emerging?
Yeah, the upward spiral, I think, is a really important sort of visual to keep in our minds for this kind of thing, and for, I think, all the work that you're doing, Claudette, because mm-hmm. because I think there's this notion, you know, and when you work with organizations, you know, you get the we tried this before, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Oh, here we go again, right? You get
right,
that,
and
it's fair. And I think, you know, mm-hmm. the thing that I always share with organizations is this notion of the upward spiral. Like, yes, we've come back around, but we're in a different elevation than we were before. Mm-hmm. We've made some progress. We've gotten somewhere. And so if we tried it before, the context has changed. And so let's examine what's different about the context. Why didn't it work before? Mm-hmm. And why might it work in this context, right? So that upward spiral, I think, is a really powerful visual to keep in mind that helps us kind of counter that, oh yeah, we tried that before. Right.
Yeah, right. Yeah. It pulls people into something greater than themselves, right? There's a sense of excitement about it often. And people, you know, we look for that. You know, we want that heightened sense of energy.
Yeah. I can't live without it.
Yeah. Me neither. So on that note, we are going to take a quick break. This is the Brilliance Ultimatum. Time's up. I'm Claudette Rowley. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Conscious Confidence Radio, a timeless wisdom with Sarah Maine. Tune in each month on Transformation Talk Radio and join Sarah on an adventurous journey to the deeper level of meaning to move beyond today's world of constant change, confusion, and uncertainty beyond the shadow of fear. This hit show explores key concepts such as confidence, values, and attitude in a dynamic way. To learn more about Sarah and her work, visit sarahmaine.com.
Has your buzz for life buzzed off? Feeling ignored, invisible, and wondering if this is really all there is? The years go by faster as we gain momentum. You're halfway there. Are you gathering speed or puttering out? Hit your stride for the liberating half of life. Comfortable in your skin? You can do better than that. Tune in to Discovering You Again Radio as host Susan Axelrod encourages listeners to decide what they want, get inspired to action, and face challenges head on. Host Susan Axelrod pulls no punches, encouraging you to grab the brass ring and soar. For more information about Susan, go to www.whatwillyourlegacybe.com.
Choose the new earth on the Cornelia Stephanie Show. Tune in each week on Transformation Talk Radio as Cornelia takes listeners on an odyssey of higher consciousness to inspire, educate, and empower. Cornelia guides people on the path of self-healing, peace, and liberation. The Cornelia Stephanie Show is your catalyst for anchoring heaven on earth on a global scale. For more information, go to CorneliaStephanie.com.
And we're back on the Brilliance Ultimatum. I am Claudette Rowley here with my guest today, Eric Isle, and we have been talking about human experience and how work can be more than just a four-letter word and upward spirals and all sorts of great things. So, Eric, before we dive back in, could you please share with listeners how they can find out more about you and your work?
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's always a bit tricky. It's because there's, you know, like so many of us, I have a million different identities out there in the world. I'm not just a consultant. I'm not just a writer. I'm not just a speaker. I'm also a DJ, and I'm a lot of different things. So, but the easiest way to find me, I think, is either on LinkedIn. My name is hard to spell, E-R-Y-C-E-Y-L. Find me on LinkedIn. I love to connect with folks. That same spelling, E-R-Y-C-E-Y-L.com, is a place to find a lot of the writings that I've done over the years. And then finally, I would say realculturechange.com, which is where you can find out about kind of what I do with organizations to improve culture.
Awesome. Thanks for sharing that. Yeah.
Sure.
That's good. So you work with this really interesting concept, right? Or you call of we, right? I don't know how else to put it.
Yeah.
What is right? What is we? So tell us about your thoughts on we.
Yeah. So the concept of we, W-E, comes from a lot of the work that I've done with organizations and individuals over the years, but also a lot of work I've done out in my community as well. And I've started to come to this belief that a lot of the sort of challenges that we're facing at work and in the world as a whole can be solved with what I call a broader sense of we. I think generally we carry around a pretty narrow sense of what we mean by we. Mm-hmm. And when we have a narrow sense of what we mean by we necessarily have a broad sense of who they is. Mm. And as I talk through this, you'll have to pardon the weird grammar of this. But this, you know, when we can broaden our sense of we, I think we create more possibility. We create more possibility for collaboration, for contribution, as we've talked about, and for creation of new things. And I think the easiest way to make this concrete is to look at the work that you and I do in organizations, right? Mm-hmm. And pretty much any organization you work with, any size in any industry, complains about silos.
Right.
In fact, I worked with a client who called them cylinders of excellence.
Oh God.
Yeah. Yeah. And what silos are a narrow sense of we, right? Mm-hmm. It's we equals my team, my department. And I identify very strongly with that. And when you go out and work with organizations, you typically see that teams are working pretty well within themselves, mm-hmm. but working across teams, you know, collaborating effectively isn't really happening. I assume that's what you've seen in your work as well, Claudette.
Absolutely, yeah.
Right. So then we hear, you know, employees say, you know, we, meaning just their little small work group, and when they say they're talking about, you know, some other team that isn't pulling their weight, mm-hmm. Or they mean they is managers who don't listen. Mm-hmm. And then when you work with leaders, they also have a narrow sense of we and a broad sense of they, right? The mm-hmm. the we for a senior leader might just be their little inner circle, and the they might be, you know, all those employees who complain and just don't get the big picture, right? Okay. and obviously, you know, when we can see this play out, you know, in society. Now, you don't have to look too hard at news or at social media to find some really narrow we's who are sort of casting aspersions and saying nasty things about any number of, you know, very broad they's. Mm-hmm. And when we do that, of course, we're focusing on what makes us different and completely missing out on what makes us alike. And that's where I feel like we limit ourselves and limit what we can accomplish and contribute. So this is where I think this sense of we presents a real possibility and a real potential for organizations. If we can number one, you know, first of all, accept that silos exist for a reason. You know, in organizations, it's specialization, and that's important, and that has helped corporations and our economy grow, right? That specialization. There will always be a tension in organizations between, say, growth engines and control engines, right? Between sales and marketing and legal and compliance and accounting, right? Right. So those silos, if we can just sort of accept that silos exist for a reason, and we're going to have this tension, then our goal isn't to eliminate these silos, but our goal becomes how do we network them? How do we make them more permeable, so that we can broaden what we mean by we, right? So that we starts to mean not just my team, it starts to mean my whole organization, it starts to mean my organization and its customers and suppliers, it starts to mean my organization and the communities in which it operates, right? We start to really broaden out what we mean by we. Then, if we can look at the silos that we have, and you know, I use in my work with organizational cultures, I use Human Synergistics Organizational Effectiveness Inventory, and that looks at one of the many things it looks at is intra-team work and cooperation and intra-team collaboration. Mm-hmm. And you can when you have an assessment like that, you can see, you know, oh, we have really strong narrow we's and we have a really weak broad they. Uh-huh. So when organizations have this problem, which every organization I've seen does, and I don't know what this comes from. I think over the years, people like you and me have done a lot of work on team building, right?
Yeah.
And we've got great teams now. We have really strong teams, and they identify very closely with themselves, with their membership. But if we can then sort of lift up out of that, and we come back to this concept of purpose. And I know that's really core to your work too. But I think when we start to say, okay, all of these little narrow we's have the same shared purpose, then aren't we just one we?
Yeah.
So I always like to say that a big why creates a bigger we. So if we can really home in on what we're here to do, then we can start to see that, oh, it's not a collection of a bunch of little we's. It's one big we. And obviously I think the ramifications in society as a whole are pretty clear. But I think the work to be done is for each of us as individuals, and then for organizations as well, is to say, how am I narrowly prescribing my we, and how can I reach out of it?
Mm-hmm. You know, what strikes me is when we're talking about the one we, right? If you think about a company,
yeah.
If we're all one we, then we're all accountable.
Right.
That we're all empowered, we're all owners, we're all, you know, it's up to all of us to figure out X, Y, or Z. And I think it's really, that's what strikes me. Like, I can see, I don't know, thinking of a particular company I just work with and have for a while, just like if they were all one we, and they're getting closer to that certainly than they were, you know, they'd be sort of looking at each other like, okay, what do we need to do differently here?
Yeah.
Right. Versus, yeah. Oh, it was over, you know, purchasing, it was shipping, it was right. So and so. And I think that really, you know, like we're all in this together.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, and you see this, I think I'm sure you've seen it in mergers and acquisitions all the time, right? And sort of at its most glaring, right? The we, you know, maybe the we broadens, the we broadens out, interestingly, in mergers and acquisitions, where, you know, I might have just been my team. Now I strongly identify with my legacy company. And they is whatever company that we've merged with. And you see this all the time. You see the corporate communications department comes out with this campaign. That's one Acme, right? And it's such, I don't know how many times I've seen this, you know,
yeah.
And the collateral goes out that says, we're one company. We are one company name. But there's not a lot of work actually done beneath that superficial stuff. Mm-hmm. to say, what does it take? What's causing us to over-identify maybe with our legacy company or with our little team, and what do we need to lift up to broaden that sense of we, and that I think gets missed.
Well, and one way I often think about this is when, because an experience I've had is when you blend a family, right? And you bring kids together that are step siblings, right?
Absolutely.
And may or may not be all that interested in that arrangement, depending on the situation, right? But if a couple comes in and says, "We are now one family," here's the announcement. We've pronounced it, right? You can imagine those kids are like, "No, what are you talking about?" Right? And because they have to go through the whole process, just like two organizations merging do, right? What are the two cultures? How do we build relationships? What's it like to be here? How can we compromise? How do we, whatever, right? And you go through the whole process. And so it's, but two organizations, it's much, much, hugely, bigger process because it's so complex. There's so many people involved. But I think that's the part that gets missed is people do not just change on a dime and say, "Yep, you're right. We're one Acme."
Oh, that's so insightful. I think you're absolutely right, and it makes me think of we missed this opportunity to say, look, we're looking to the future. Right? This one, whatever it is, one family, is our future, but we're not just forgetting the past,
right?
And so often in that situation, that's part of what people are protecting is that past that they want to still feel was valuable, that I've spent years working on being part of this family. So does that just go away now?
Right.
No, how do we honor that as we move forward? And that's the work, I think, for organizations to really focus on.
Absolutely, yeah. The organizations have the exact same set of feelings, right? People have the exact same set of emotions, probably. Like, we had a great company. Now we're losing something. Although the future might be better, this is still hard.
Yes.
It's still hard because it's still painful and, I may not like it and things are getting uncomfortable and you have to give me something to work toward and look forward to.
Absolutely.
For this to come together. So I really, I love this idea of the one of this larger, not the one we, but the larger we, and really having, organizations do their own assessment of like, what kind of we's are we, right? Are they narrow? Are they broad? What's happening? Who are the they's?
Yeah.
How do we think about it? Oh, how does that hold us back from, getting X, Y, or Z accomplished? Or how do we contribute differently because of it, right? So this is Eric, very brilliant, very brilliant.
Oh, thank you. Thanks, Claudette. I appreciate that.
Yeah, I love it. So we're gonna go to break now. We'll take a quick break. And when we come back, Eric and I are going to talk about what's emerging, right? What are the positive things that we see, especially that Eric sees emerging? And so you are listening to the Brilliance Ultimatum. Time's up. This is Claudette Rowley, and stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Did you know that all of the shows on the Transformation Radio Network are available as podcasts to stream or download?
Really?
Check us out. Go to transformationradio.fm. We have business shows, spiritual shows, energy healing shows, and pretty much everything in between. Something for everyone guaranteed to inspire, educate, and transform. We are transforming the world, one listener at a time.
This is Debbie Pokornik with a break-free parenting tip. If you haven't been practicing active listening or not getting into some bad habits, it's a good idea to go back to the basics and remind yourself how to be a good listener. Here's an idea that might help. When your child comes to you with a story about her day, set aside whatever you're doing and give her your full attention. If you're in the middle of something that can't be put aside, tell her that you really want to be able to give her story your full attention and ask if you could continue the conversation at a specific time. So for example, this sounds like an important story and I'd really like to give it my full attention. Can we talk about it in 10 minutes when supper's in the oven? Active listening might sound like common sense, but often it's these simple skills that get buried in our parenting pack and easily forgotten or overlooked. Challenge yourself to practice this skill for a full week and see if you notice a difference in how much your child is sharing.
For information and to work with Debbie, visit empoweringnrg.com.
We remember a time when you could simply form a thought and it would manifest. The harmony was forgotten, but it is returning now. The Power of Inspiration and Awakening Radio with Julia Griffin on TransformationTalkRadio.com each second and fourth Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific will take you on adventures through the heart and spirit, exploring who we once were. This intuitive healer studied under the guidance of wolves, learning from their wisdom to master a higher frequency for a new state of mind. Visit OneTrueSelf.com.
Learn to live in the light and unveil the authentic you with A Time of Healing Radio with me, Felice Diana, on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Tune in every third Tuesday at 11 a.m. Pacific as I help listeners understand sacred fusion energy and how to connect to the spirit that fuels the very life we live. Explore the journey of spiritual transcendence and ultimately discover the path to peace, love, purpose and wholeness. For more information, visit atimeofhealing.com.
You know that moment when you realize you've mastered your wellness or that you will never fall off the roller coaster of life? Well, yeah, me either. But I still ride unicorn. I will teach you how to become a mindset master. You will learn how your habits and behavior affect the success of your nutrition and exercise, relationships, organization, and so much more. Motivation doesn't arrive in an email, so stop waiting for it. You have to take action, then motivation follows. I am Coach Peggy Wells. Get out of your comfort zone and recognize the simple truth. We aren't that special. We all have crap to deal with, and we all have a lot more in common than not. I want to spark you into action. We will learn, love, and laugh together. So join me every first and third Monday at 3 p.m. Pacific for Coach Couch and Coffee Radio, where you will learn that being happy and healthy is way more than carrot sticks and squats. I'll talk to you later.
Hi, we're back on the Brilliance Ultimatum. I'm Claudette Rowley. Here is my guest, Eric Isle. And Eric, we're both excited to talk about what's emerging, aren't we?
Absolutely.
What is emerging, right? What do we see happening in the world, you know? And when I think of emergence, and then I'll, you know, certainly ask you to share, you know, how you think about it. When I think of emergence, it's something even in a small organization, I'm always watching for, listening for, and tuning into, right? It's sort of that, it's like what's on the horizon that maybe folks some folks have noticed, but a lot of folks haven't, right? But it's sort of up and coming, and it's either really positive, or it could be something that we are like, whoa, wow, that's not going to be good. We need to take steps now, right? And talk about it.
Right.
So I think of emergence that way. It's that's something over the edge, like that we're just about to see. And I was curious, how do you think about it?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I think about it in somewhat pragmatic terms, which is not like me because I'm pretty much an idealist. But when I think about it in pragmatic terms, I think about, you know, that, you know, organizations have really strong muscles and habits around noticing what's wrong.
Right.
And we're really good at that. and you know, and there's good, probably just good evolutionary reasons why we're really good at spotting what goes wrong. Right. Mm-hmm. And we aren't as trained at spotting what goes right.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was talking to, you know, a CEO recently who was looking at a dashboard of metrics, you know, his executive dashboard, and everything looked great. And there was one thing that was orange, everything, mm-hmm. everything else was green. And all he wanted to talk about was what was orange. And, you know, and I was talking to him about it. And he said, you know, when I was in school, my parents were the same way. I'd bring home my report card and they'd see all the A's and they'd want to talk about that B plus.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and so we're really I wouldn't say hardwired, but we've certainly been conditioned to really focus there. So when I look at emergence, I look at developing a set of skills around how do you spot these positive things,
mm-hmm.
right? How do you spot, when you were describing your definition of emergence, I was thinking about like, how do you spot, well, the sun's just about to rise, right? Like how do you spot those things? And I feel like that's something that actually takes discipline.
It does.
And it takes intention, and it's not the habit, as I said, of organizations at all.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a big shift. And so to your question, I think, you know, when I think about emergence, I think about just as simple as that, like noticing what's going right.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And homing in on that.
Yeah. And really, and building on it, right? letting it, you know, continue to emerge, shepherd it, all of that. Yeah. So what is going right? What do you see, Eric?
Well, I see a few things going right. And I see, I think maybe glimmers of that sun about to rise. Right. Mm-hmm. And I see it in places like, you know, we began this conversation talking about the focus on the customer experience. Right. I think that's a step in the direction of human experience. And I think, you know, we're seeing organizations that, like I said before, I work with a lot of utility companies. Utility companies are in most markets entitled to their customers.
In
most places in the United States and Canada, you don't get a choice of which utility you're going to do business with. And so they have over the years taken their customers for granted. So much so that they haven't even called their customers customers. Mm-hmm. They've called them meters, which is fantastically dehumanizing. And rate payers. And I've seen this massive shift where that language is all but gone. Mm-hmm. in that sector, where there is an acceptance, an embracing maybe even of the fact that we're serving customers. Mm-hmm. And I think that to me, in a place where, you know, you kind of don't have to for economic reasons, mm-hmm. Focus on the customer, though arguably you do. That to me is something that's emerging that's exciting, because then it says that, okay, we're waking up in all sorts of sectors to the fact that this is all about humans. And mm-hmm. and that's really fascinating to me, because I think, you know, the other things that are clearly emerging are, you know, all of this technology stuff, right? Mm-hmm. And that's really important, right? AI and all of the stuff that we're able to automate, robotic process automation, all these things that are happening in workplaces that are really exciting. And they make the humans even more important.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is what mm-hmm. gets missed in that conversation.
Yes,
right?
Yes, I agree. Yeah.
Because we, you know, we've, and you know, whether it's, you know, from technology or whether it's been from, you know, process reengineering in the 90s where we streamlined things and we eliminated waste, right? We did all that great stuff. And so we've eliminated or automated or outsourced a bunch of really low value work. Now, humans are doing the really high value work.
Mm-hmm.
And that shift, which I think organizations are just starting to realize, mm-hmm. makes the focus on humans really, really important.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the humans are creating your brand. They're creating your customer experience. There's no other way for you to innovate other than with humans. Mm-hmm. They're going to do that stuff. And so, so as I see that dawning sort of realization, I get really excited for the possibilities, for organizations to really bring out the most in people, and to serve some of those higher order needs so that work, as I said, is not just a four letter word, but it becomes beyond a paycheck. It starts to climb Maslow's hierarchy, right? And mm-hmm. and work can actually be a path to self-actualization. And I think that sort of pinnacle is what we're just starting to see the glimmers of.
Mm. Oh, I love that. Yeah. It's such a shift. Work is not just a paycheck. It's a path to self-actualization.
Right. Hopefully.
Hopefully. Yeah. And then that would probably be one of the first times in history that has happened, right? Except for a few occasional rare people unique people who had that opportunity, right? But for most people, that was not the case. Not the case at all.
And that's where I think we're also, you know, something that I'm seeing emerging that's related to that is that, you know, we've used this term knowledge worker for so long.
Yeah.
And in fact, it kind of makes me a little bit ill. I don't like that term anymore. Mm-hmm. But knowledge is not actually what's creating value anymore, right? Knowledge is freely available now.
Right.
pretty much. What's creating value is human interactions.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really exciting. So I think we're seeing this rise of what I call the interaction worker, where that's the role of so many people, and whether it's interacting externally outside of the organization or internally within the organization, that's where value is getting created, is in those interactions. That's why people are spending so much time in their email, right? Or on Slack or IM or whatever it is.
Yeah.
because that actually is our job. Our job is to interact.
Right. We are people.
Yes. Yeah.
I like that. The relationship worker really changes. Yeah. Knowledge is freely available, but your ability to be emotionally intelligent, your ability to interact with people, your ability to build each other up, et cetera, right?
Yes.
That's a commodity in some ways, because not everyone, right, knows how to do it well, right? But everyone can learn how to do it well, right? So it's learnable, it's coachable, it's absolutely possible. So
absolutely.
Wow, I love that. This is such an amazing note to end our show on, right?
Wonderful.
This idea of relationships is this, you know, is what's next at work. So Eric, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today.
Oh, it's been so much fun, Claudette. Thank you for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. Thank you for sharing such great information and so many amazing insights with our listeners on how work is not just another four-letter word. And I want to thank all of our listeners as well, always, for tuning in to another great show. We always have a fun time. Please join us twice a month, the second and fourth Fridays of each month at 1 p.m. Eastern and 10 a.m. Pacific. We will be back here in just a couple of weeks for another episode of The Brilliance Ultimatum. Time's up. Have a great week.
You've been listening to the hit show, The Brilliance Ultimatum, Time's Up with Claudette Rowley. Tune in next time on TransformationTalkRadio.com for powerful conversations, practical innovations, and transformative solutions as Claudette and her guests delve into the possibilities and move beyond the mindset of division. Each show, Claudette strikes right at the heart of the matter and looks past political squabbles, lack of humanity, and what she calls reality resistance. We just need the will. For more information about the Brilliance Ultimatum, Time's Up, visit culturalbrilliance.com and join the cultural revolution. See you next time.